This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. Texas is a tough place, wild and beautiful, boundless and abundant, but tough. Carroll Scala had a tough start in life. His mother died giving birth to him. His father never forgave him, and Carroll never forgot that, or her. He grows up feeling his father's coolness, missing his mother's warmth, and feuding with his three older brothers. Sure can ride a horse, though. And when he's a teenager, he's given the chance to ride his family's fastest horse in a high-stakes race in which his family's fortunes hang in the balance. The Wake of Forgiveness is the debut novel of Bruce Mahart, who teaches at Lone Star College. It's a novel that's been praised for its stunning prose, epical story, and piercing dialogue. Bruce Mahart joins us from the studios of KUHF in Houston. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you, Scott. It's good to be here.
And boy, this novel opens with a punch, doesn't it?
Well, I suppose it does. I guess the way to start a good story is to start where it gets interesting, and for me that was the crux of the story. From the very beginning, this is what I imagined was something very different from my own life. I was a mama's boy, and the focal character here, Carroll, loses his mother before he ever meets her.
The date is what, 18?
He's born in 1895.
To set this story as Carroll grows up, there are two rival families in town, the Scalas and the Villa Seniors.
Yes.
What pitched them against each other?
Well, I think we have two strong-willed patriarchs, one who's in effect trying to build an empire. He's fleeing the unrest that's beginning in 1910 with civil unrest, civil revolution effectively in Mexico, trying to escape with some of his wealth intact. He comes looking for, and he has daughters. He comes looking to form an allegiance and to marry the strongest, wealthiest family in the particular county that he set his eye on. Pitted against him is a relatively hard, sort of old-fashioned Czech patriarch, Václav Scala, and while he's interested in increasing his land holdings, he tends to do it by betting with his neighbors and gambling horse races or gambling on horse races to take some of the acreage away from his neighbors and bring it under his fold of his growing sort of property holdings.
This book, sentence by sentence, betrays a love of Texas Hill Country. And I guess I was surprised to finish it and turn to the publisher's information and find out that you're a city kid from Houston.
Very much so. And my father grew up on a cash crop farm, sort of further south and east in Texas than the Hill Country, actually a little bit east of Lavaca County where this takes place. But Lavaca County is the birthplace of my grandfather on my father's side. Mm. And something about the country and the countryside and the animals always made me feel kind of lonely when I would go to the country. All of our family outings, the holidays and family reunions and weddings, because my father's six sisters, most of them stayed in the country, anytime there was a family occasion, that's where we would go. Mm-hmm. And here I found myself among literally 30-some-odd cousins who all, you know, knew how to drive a tractor and knew how to get between the strands of barbed wire without cutting themselves to pieces and weren't terribly afraid of the bulls in the pasture. And I found myself, you know, the outsider in what should feel like my homeland. And that's what has always sort of drawn it to me, mm-hmm. or drawn me to it, rather.
So looking back on it, was that kind of the beginning of the novel? There were characters who took root in your mind almost as you grew up?
I suppose. I'm not the kind of writer who can really claim that I was always a writer and always thought in stories. Mostly what I've always done, I think, is sort of pay attention and wonder what it would be like to be someone else. Just the notion of growing up without a mother was inconceivable to me, and as a writer, that's what interests me, not what I know, but what I might discover.
Your dialogue has been praised in this book for having an absolutely authentic and colorful quality. So my question is, how do you know it's authentic?
I'm not sure you can unless there are no time machines, best I know. But I think the very specific sort of combination of this Czech Bohemian dialect, which is more idiom than anything else, mm-hmm. and sort of the rural sensibility that goes with it, I think Eudora Welty, I believe it was, said one time that what dialogue should do is effectively not bore the reader, that it should be the most entertaining lines on the page, mm-hmm. and also reveal something about the character, yes, and move the story forward. So in a case like that, I think it does tell us something about the man who's saying it. I think most interesting dialogue does.
What did you do on your way to becoming a novelist?
A great many things. I had to work my way through my undergraduate degree. I had a friend whose uncle was the president or vice president of a company that sold conveyor belting. And so there are probably only maybe 200 or 300 people in the United States who know as much about conveyor belting as I do.
We have the opportunity, is there something we could all stand to learn about conveyor belting?
Everything that's bought or sold, everything that you put in your mouth to eat, just about everything that you touch has at one point been on a conveyor belt.
So conveyor belt salesmen are the unsung heroes of American commerce?
I think without a doubt. That's safe to say, yes.
What do you learn from doing a lot of different things on your way to writing novels?
I suppose you learn how different kinds of people speak and how different kinds of people live. You know, I actually enjoyed doing some really tough jobs. I did conveyor belting work. Started off in the warehouse, did sales. I worked on an oil rig. I was a medical courier. And you get to speak with just such a wonderful cross-section of people, and maybe that helps more than anything in dialogue. But it also gives you something to really be curious about that has a human root to it, that's not some idea.
And how do you convince someone to buy a conveyor belt? I'm guessing that there might be a lesson in there as to what you need to reach into another person's heart and mind.
I think writing is a lot like sales. If you're going to, what's the old line, the willing suspension of disbelief, if you're going to put something on the page that comes straight from your imagination and you have no other tools but language, and you're trying to convince someone that it's worth their time to suspend their disbelief, to believe in a story, that, you know, art is at the root of artifice, that it's effectively imaginary, then you have to do a sales job. It's just the tools are different.
Bruce Mahart, his debut novel, The Wake of Forgiveness. Speaking with us from Houston, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Scott, very much. It's been a pleasure.